Yeah, Ronald is a prophet, priest, and king. Have you guys ever heard that teaching before? It's popular in some circles. Not ours.
Reformed.
Yeah, highly reformed circles. Like Vodi Bakum would be somebody who would teach that. And I have a lot of respect for Vodi Bakum in other areas, but when you say a man is a prophet, priest, and king, I mean, what does that suggest about his leadership?
Probably fairly authoritarian.
Uh-huh.
It's, I am your God, serve me, because I'm the interpreter of God.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of look at the idea of a king rules on behalf of God. A prophet speaks on behalf of God. And a priest mediates on behalf of God. So it's almost like, are you guys familiar with the Mormon doctrine of marriage? Okay, I guess not. So it's really fascinating. The Mormons have an understanding that for the woman to go to heaven, it is her husband who has to take her there. During the Mormon ceremony, marriage ceremony, they have like this hall of mirrors, which represents eternity. And there is a veil that separates the husband and the wife, or the bride and the groom. And they're each given a secret temple name during this ceremony. And during the climax of the ceremony, the groom will reach through this curtain and grab his bride's hand and then call her by her secret temple name and then pull her through the veil and into eternity. And so that's part of the teaching, is that for her to come into eternity, it's her husband who has to call out her name to do so. Does that make sense? So can you just imagine her veil? Yeah, it's like, what's your secret temple name? What is, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, it can lead to a lot of that. And incidentally, that's why if a, let's say you are a Mormon woman and your husband goes apostate and is no longer a Mormon, you are permitted to divorce him and marry a godly Mormon widower who will then kind of bring you into salvation. Does that make sense? And so that's like the extreme patriarchal priesthood type of thing. Now, I'm sure men like Vodi Bakum would not take it to that extreme, you know what I'm saying? But when the husband is the one who mediates on behalf of the family, I don't know, it can go all kinds of wrong. Like, what have you guys ever seen the impact of that on others?
So do they teach that only married women will be in heaven? Like, there's no single Mormon?
Well, going back to Mormonism, and this is where Joseph Smith kind of developed the doctrine of plural marriage, where he would actually spiritually marry these other women so that he could pull them into heaven.
Spiritually have real children.
And spiritually have real children too. You would send men on missions and then you'll spiritually marry their wives. So I mean he was a bad dude. Bad dude. So kind of going back to like this high patriarchy thing, I mean what are some of the, why does it seem to be true? Why? Yeah, somebody reading Prophet, Priest, and King, they're like, yeah, I think that makes sense to me.
I think because those words are used to describe Christ, if you're thinking of a husband towards his wife as Christ is towards the church, I could see that phraseology making sense in your thought process.
Yeah, no, that's great. Other thoughts on that? On the proper priest king. Well, we'll kind of go. We'll keep on going now. How does Ronald react to contemporary culture?
Well, he's obviously bringing up the evils of feminism to, you know, put her in a role.
Mm-hmm.
As, you know, I'm guessing, you know, it says college educated, so at that point, you know, it's cushy, kind of a, I'm sure there's some kind of power struggle.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. So we talk about the evils of feminism. Is feminism completely evil? I mean, what is feminism?
Today?
Well, just as a general, we'll talk about historical context first, and then we'll talk about it today. I mean, historically, has feminism done any good things?
Right to vote.
Yeah, right to vote.
Some legal rights and the ability to own things and take out money and that sort of thing.
Keep your children.
Keep your children. Mm-hmm.
Feminism at root was a movement towards recognition of the equal worth of women.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's how it started.
Yeah. And so women voting, running for political office, being recognized as full citizens, owning property. I mean, there were some needed changes that needed to happen. And in fact, if you were to look at Jesus's ministry, it would have been considered feminism relative to the Roman world. Right? I mean, you even look at how the Bible has the first witnesses of the resurrection are women. Often in a Jewish court of law, you had to have two women witnesses to equal one man witness. Right? And that wasn't the biblical law, but that was just kind of their commentary on the law. So, yeah, I mean, so there's a lot of good things there. But what's the modern feminism movement about right now? What's their core cause?
Abortion.
Self.
Would be abortion?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the elevation, like, women are better than men.
Okay. Women are better than men.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of toxic.
Toxic masculinity. Yeah.
It's kind of that I am woman, hear me roar type of mindset.
Mm-hmm.
All society is a patriarchal oppression.
Yeah. Yeah, rooting out patriarchy where they find it. Equal pay would be one of the big causes that they have right now. Like the women's national soccer team, that's their big cause.
We are hot.
Yeah.
We are hot. Jack?
George just came and got him saying we're hot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Is it your...
We're having more sound troubles. Anybody know the system over there? Do you know the system in the two rooms, in the classrooms?
I'll see if I can help.
You're going to have to.
Okay. Love it. Yeah, that's... Well, glad this is happening today, not yesterday.
Yeah,
right?
Yep. The building is just
building
barely
fine.
Made it. Now it's a freaking let alone weekend.
Yeah. So So that's one thing. Like there is like feminism as it stands right now, by the thought leaders of self-proclaimed feminist. I mean, it's kind of drifted into an anti-life, even anti-God. Theology where they want to throw off the shackles of all patriarchy. Okay, so I mean, so there's a point there, right?
Anti-marriage.
Yes.
Yeah, anti-marriage would be another one. That's a patriarchal institution.
Yeah. A revolt against, you know, motherhood past, you know, just the abortion side, but in society,
mm-hmm.
you know, rejecting that rule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what about, what will be the long-term impact on his wife of leading this way?
You'll flatten her out.
Huh?
You'll flatten her out. She won't be passionate about anything. She won't be driven to do anything. She'll just wait for orders.
Yeah. Noah, you have thoughts?
She might not be responsible for her own growth, like spiritual growth, if her husband is supposed to be in charge of all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like maybe
she'll have less ownership of her own walk with the Lord, right?
Yeah.
thoughts? Long-term impact.
You know, with most models, like, as long as the husband and wife both have the same idea of what it should look like, mm-hmm. there can be peace. Like, it can be a peaceful marriage. Mm-hmm. And they can get along and both, you know, be relatively happy with it. Mm-hmm. But I think the question is this a model that's going to help his wife to flourish and fully realize the gifts and abilities that her that God has given her?
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of cases, I think we would say maybe not. I mean, he equates the evils of feminism, it looks like, with maybe working outside the home.
Mm-hmm.
So something like that is just going to cut off a lot of things as options, even.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Why educate women then? Why, you know, all of those
yeah.
things? That they tend to, those questions tend to flourish in these communities.
Yeah. Like, have your daughter live at home until they're married. Mm-hmm. So what's the danger of this style of leadership? What would be the danger of this style of leadership?
Okay. One thing is, I mean, it weakens both of them. It really, the strong wife makes a stronger husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, that idea that you're one flesh, you're one body, and if you weaken your wife, if you don't allow her to exercise who she is in Christ and who God created her to be, and diminishing both of your ability to
mm-hmm.
fulfill what God's calling is on your life.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's also an attitude of pride that comes within that in the sinful thought process.
Mm-hmm.
Not aware of it.
Yeah, I think one thing is, I mean, kind of building off of what you said, I mean, what if Ronald has a blind spot? What if there's some area where he needs to really be worked on? I mean, your pastor can only see so much, right? So when you're like the prophet, priest, and king, you can go to don't touch the Lord's anointed pretty quickly. So it can kind of just flatten even his spiritual growth
mm-hmm.
as well. Does that make sense? And if he's being harsh and not being gentle, and you know, that is one of the fruit of the Spirit, being gentle. How do you know if you're not gentle? Yeah, so I think there's, in some of these types of environments of high patriarchy, another danger I've seen is like they just don't go to church. Yeah, they are their own church. They're their own unit. When a husband has that kind of power and authority, and let's say he's self-employed, he becomes the guy who answers to nobody and just doesn't understand just the give and take of living in even a larger community. So that's something that I've seen in these kinds of environments. And then that woman is super exposed because, like, her husband is everything, right?
I think this entire situation hinges on his pride or humility.
Yeah.
If he believes all these things in a humble way, where men
yeah.
come and speak into his life and be like, whoa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be the complete difference. Like, all these things, if he truly, like, humbly believes them, might not manifest in this completely negative way.
Yeah.
Like, his wife may really be taken by this concept of feminism and their home struggling, and she needs to be told to come home.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if he's doing that humbly, it will be much differently than if he's, I'm the king, come home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and it, you know, it does, instead of saying he's prophet, priest, and king, it also leaves out that he's a servant. He's, you know, all the things that Christ was, that he was humble, that he was
yeah.
one that came to be, you know, to give his life for the church. And so, for their kids, for their wife, for him, they're all missing that aspect of who Christ is, if he's loving his wife as Christ loved the church.
Mm-hmm.
That Christ was humble and sacrificed
mm-hmm.
servant. That's what he's, maybe the leader, but he's the way in which he leads is distorted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I do think, like, this type of prophet, priest, king, when you have that kind of authority, what kind of feedback loop is he going to have about how he's doing? You know what I'm saying? That's why the blind spots could really just grow. And he's like, yeah, of course, you know, it's kind of like the, you know, the French king. Of course my people love me. Why wouldn't they love the king? You know what I'm saying? They're all happy. Don't you see? You know what I'm saying? And, yeah, it can lead to a lot of blind spots just really growing in leadership. So I agree. I mean, if a person is truly a godly man and really Christ-like, like if Jesus was actually married, which he's not, but, you know, he would be this kind of husband too, but I digress. So let's talk about Ronald's son, Declan. He moves to New York to pursue an art degree, lives in the life in the metropolis, opens his eyes to a new way of seeing the world. While he does not reject the Christianity of his youth, he rejects the patriarchy of his father. While at school, he meets and falls in love with a beautiful finance student. 10 years and two kids later, Declan's wife comes home and tells him that she got a promotion and the family will be moving to London. Knowing that his wife had already accepted the job, Declan quits his job as a sales lead at the Pottery Barn, and he decides to act as a servant leader and take care of his children while his wife pursues her career as an investment banker. Okay, so this is the other side of the spectrum with Declan. So what does Declan get right in marriage and what does he get wrong? What does he get right? What does he get wrong?
Well, he gets right that an art degree can lead to a job at Pottery Barn.
I'm glad he caught that, Joe. I worked on that one. That's right.
He takes care of his children.
Yeah, he's an involved father.
Responsibility as a father.
He's sacrificially loving his wife.
Mm-hmm. He's keeping the family together.
Yeah. Yeah.
He kind of has the one piece the other guy was missing.
Yeah.
But he's projected all the
time. Uh-huh. Okay, what's he getting wrong?
His role.
Uh-huh.
His role, not, okay, you can do whatever you want, and I'm going to totally be submissive, contrary to maybe his role.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with his wife taking that job without talking about it, tells you that he has not taken the lead role in the family. Because you really wouldn't do that.
Nor does his opinion probably even matter. So it's, this is good, this is great, we're all in, off to London we go.
Yes. Maybe there's a Pottery Barn equivalent over there. I don't know.
The old Shire.
Anybody shop at Pottery Barn, by the way?
No.
No?
It's a place.
In California, we did kind of walk in there, but it's just kind of like this.
Bougie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you probably have a degree in philosophy. You probably have a degree in art. Yeah.
IKEA is way better.
Yeah.
And cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah, so how does Declan respond to contemporary culture in this case?
He's embracing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what would be the long-term impact on his wife, and what would the potential impact be on Declan?
Well, literally, they've decided their role based on who makes more money. So,
yes.
I mean, that just seems like an odd valuation and way of assigning leadership and roles.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that's pretty commonly modern. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've got more pull because I provide more,
uh-huh.
thus I have more piece of the pie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, so, yeah, what else? What would be the long-term impact on Declan and even his wife?
Well, if he's not leading his wife, he's probably not also leading his children. And so him being home raising them isn't necessarily going to be fruitful for their spiritual growth either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if he were to, he says he's being a servant leader and to lead by service. What do you think? Is he doing that?
He's definitely following.
He's definitely following?
Like following.
Yeah.
Yeah, like just because you're being a servant doesn't mean you're being a servant leader. Like there's a difference between those two things. You can be a servant without being a servant leader. It seems like he's.
Yeah, leadership means you at least set direction in some way, right?
Yeah.
The one real problem with this whole thing is the part Declan's wife comes home and tells him that she got a promotion and the family will be moving to London. Like, minus that sentence, there's a lot of possible ways that this could have happened, and they still end up with him taking care of the children and her working and living in London. Mm-hmm. And he could have made that decision and be making that choice. And mm-hmm. But the problem is that she came home and said, this is what we're doing. He said, yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. I think it would also be interesting to see like where the marriage was at, like from a psychological standpoint in like 20 years, you know, where as he's used to being the servant leader, as he calls it, and she's used to being the financial leader, what kind of dynamic shift does that happen, or what kind of dynamic shift changes when the kids are no longer at home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it leaves the door open for a lot of bitterness and degrading. Like, the wife, I think there's a normal, natural pull to let your husband make decisions, and then when you're not doing that, I think it opens you up to a lot of bitterness, of being upset with him for not doing those things, but you're the one taking over and doing them, and then you tend to become very, you just look down on your husband, and you make little comments, and you just are constantly putting them down, of like, well, you can't do that, so I'm just going to do it, and you can't make decisions, so I'm just going to make the decisions. And you work at Pottery Barn, so I have to go to work and make all this money for us because we can't live off your stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it just, in 20 years, it's just going to be this barely holding on. The husband's just going
to
be.
And assuming that they're both Christians, and she's like, I want my husband to leave, but he's not.
Yeah, so
I'm doing this because he's a failure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one thing we have to look at also is that it says while he does not reject Christianity, of his youth, he rejects the patriarchy of his father. So it goes back to what he saw his father do.
Right.
Kind of like we say, well, I'm not going to turn out to be like. Mm-hmm. And so I think that plays into, you know, his thought process of it also.
Yeah.
And it seems like he's throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Mm-hmm. He's rejected the bad parts of his dad's patriarchal leadership, mm-hmm. but he's also rejected the good parts of biblical headship.
Yeah. Yeah, what about his wife? I mean, what's the long term? Is this good for her? Yeah.
I think this is more telling about their interpersonal workings than anything, because you have a situation where it very well might be the correct decision to go to London, but taking the action of accepting that and saying this is happening prior to a discussion would have long-lasting implications for an entire family, including the two children and the husband. The willingness of him to serve and go was a correct move in that situation, but it doesn't fix a problem that this will arise again, because it is tied to the monetary bread. I'm making the choices because of my position financially.
Yeah.
And you're serving something else other than God in that moment when you serve money.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, you look at Declan, there's some of this makes sense, like, because he's rejecting the patriarch of his father, he feels righteous in doing this. And there's some benefits when you just go along with your wife and you're just kind of told what to do. You don't have the burden of leadership. So if this tends to be terrible for the family, well, it's not your fault, you didn't make the decision. Right, so there's some areas where you can see how this does just make sense to him. I'm not like those patriarchal Christians, you know, I actually am a certain leader.
That's real similar to, you know, like a child-centered parenting. You know, on the outside you can say, well, I'm doing what makes my kids happy, but really you're just putting all the responsibility of decision-making on them and not bearing that responsibility yourself.
Yeah, I mean, do you think he'll, how well do you think he ever rebukes his wife for sin? I mean, what, in his mind, what would leadership look like?
Pleasing.
Probably manipulation. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, tries to steer her through manipulation and, you know, dropping hints and stuff like that. I mean, it just, yeah, he's clearly doesn't have power in the marriage. Yeah.
So, is there anything wrong with, like, being a happy balance of Ronald and Declan? Like,
that's what we're talking about. So, we talked about the two ditches of kind of the extreme patriarchy and the extreme egalitarian.
Like, I mean, I can see pros and cons to both, but like at the same time, I think like in a marriage, you kind of need to, it's all about a...
Yeah, I think...
I can think there, I want to say like feng shui of the marriage, but that's...
Feng shui.
That's the right word.
Balancing act. Okay, well, we go to page two at the top. Feng shui.
Sorry, in college, my roommate was all about that.
Yep. As you can see, leadership is a balancing act. Some abdicate the responsibility in the name of servant leadership. Others man up, take charge, and dominate their families. So taking their cues from the culture, which is really what both of them are doing, right? They're reacting to and from the culture. Leaders must anchor their convictions in Scripture. So in the last study, we discussed the Bible's design for leadership and submission. In this study, we'll consider the Bible's teaching regarding how to lead from Colossians 3:19 and Ephesians 5:25-32. We see that the husbands lead their wives by loving them to Christ. And so, in context, both Ephesians and Colossians were probably written around the same time. And they have something called a household code, right? Where in a Roman or Greek household at the time, you had different relationships. You would have the husband and wife. Sometimes in one is father, the other one is parents. And we'll go singular here, child or children. And then you have the owner and we'll call them the servant. We'll be a little bit more PC. And the owner and the servant. And so there was four?
Savant.
My V looked like a, well, they're autistic. So. So they would have these household codes, and it was just very common to have like a code of conduct for the household. And what Paul does is I wouldn't say he baptizes this, but he gives kind of an explanation where that these are all intimate relationships that are governed by Christ. And what we see, especially in Ephesians, is he uses this model of Christ and the church and shows how this type of ordering of society is a good thing and a God-honoring way of approaching it. All of them are to be God-centered. And so we're going to talk about the shortest one first. Colossians 3:19. Somebody want to read that?
Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh.
Okay. Very short, especially compared to Ephesians. So what twin commands does Paul issue here? First one is?
Love your wives.
That's a positive. And the second one is? Do not be harsh. Okay. That's kind of an interesting contrast, right? Now, what does a verb, be harsh, indicate about the state of a husband's heart towards his wife? So if he's harsh with her, what's going on in his heart at that moment?
He's not loving her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like what are some examples of harsh actions? And somebody is harsh with somebody, huh?
demeaning.
Mm-hmm.
Raising your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Hitting her.
Mm-hmm.
Narcissistic abuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think probably the opposite of harsh would be gentle, right? So when somebody is gentle, like let's say you meet an offensive lineman for the Kansas City Chiefs and you shake his hand, and he gives you a nice firm grip, but he's being gentle, right? He's not using all of his strength at that moment because he would crush your hand. But somebody who is harsh doesn't hold back his strength, right? He overexerts his strength. And so if you look at it in a marriage, women, I'm going to stereotype here at the risk of stereotyping, they usually are better with their words, right? And so, but men often have more strength, right? So to gain the upper hand in a marriage, men will use their strength to intimidate their wives. That's why doing things like raising your voice, being physically imposing, hitting, pushing. Domestic abuse laws did not exist in that time. You see what I'm saying? And so it's basically the opposite of gentle, where the man uses his strength of either personality or position or even physical strength to get his way with his wife. Okay, is it making sense? And you can see that would be a scary position, right? If wives, if your husband's turned on you, I mean, yeah, it's there. So why would men be tempted to be harsh with their wives, right? That's kind of what they do, but what would tempt a man to be harsh with his wife?
They're better with their words, and we're just not that smart, so it's our only reaction. It's our only
yeah.
It's the way we, it's the way we respond to
yeah.
It.
Yeah. 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 Okay. She's pushing my buttons, and I can't answer it with my. Yeah, so I'll slap her. Right. Yeah, what are some other reasons why a husband might be harsh with his wife?
If they're challenged, they feel like they're being criticized for something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They want to show that they're superior.
Okay.
I think. So, our youngest, 1 year ago, 12 months ago, he was shorter than me, little marshmallow with a high voice, and he was like annoying at worst. Right? He's kind of a mosquito that his sisters would like slap at. Just be quiet.
Uh-huh.
12 months later, he's taller than you,
mm-hmm.
almost 6 feet, he's got this deep booming voice, and he's strong, and they're afraid of him. That's 1 year, same kid, nothing else has changed about him, he's still the same. I mean, he's annoying, but annoying with this deep booming voice and this big body.
Mm-hmm.
And so even without trying to, when he does the same thing he did 12 months ago,
mm-hmm.
they're afraid instead of annoyed.
Yeah.
And so, for him now, we're having to teach him that just in order to not be harsh, you have to be gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the in-between is harsh
mm-hmm.
to the girls in your life because
yeah.
you're big and you're loud and you're strong.
Mm-hmm.
And they are suddenly aware that they're not.
Yeah.
And so I think that harsh is not necessarily like coming out of a place of hatred or control, but sometimes harsh is just a guy treating a woman like he would treat a guy.
Of Mice and Men?
Well,
Lenny
no.
petting the bunny rabbit.
Not harsh, but dumb. But
yeah.
but yeah, like they're just there's just a higher call to have self-control and
yeah.
to intentionally be gentle for a man than for most women.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us are not particularly intimidating, which is why we resort to mean words, right? Because
mm-hmm.
our bodies and our voices aren't getting the job done.
Mm-hmm.
But for a man, it's that he can
yeah.
he can be dominant very easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think kind of, and I read that with the Lenny and George, where Lenny just never knew how to control his strength in a place of men. And
I think one example, like women are, like you're doing some, you're on a hike, and your wife is slowing you down, and you're saying, come on, right? Because she's just not able to keep up, and you're not willing to slow down. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the harshness is not necessarily because of, you know, you have a job to do and you want to do it, and your wife is slowing you down, and you're getting upset at her for holding you back. Right? So that'd be another avenue of harshness. This is a summary I got from a commentator. Now, what is in view is probably the feeling of the dominant partner who can legally enforce his will on his wife, but who will not thereby win her love and respect, and can thus feel cheated and embittered at not receiving what he regards as his due. This is a likely outcome for anyone who stands on his rights alone and who knows and exercises little love called for in the first half of the verse. And so what he kind of conjectures is just the, you know, why don't you love me? And we've all seen that movie, right? I give you everything, why don't you love me? And maybe some of the bitterness of that and trying to get what he wants by being harsh instead of loving her.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, you know, that word for harsh is, or it's like a bitterness used in Revelation, the other three occurrences. You know, the waters were made bitter, and you know, eat this, take this scroll and eat it, and it will be bitter in your mouth. It's this, you've got this bitterness in the sense that,
yeah. And I think, you know, some of the things that can drive a husband to be harsh or to be bitter, probably one of the big ones is when they perceive, I'm not saying just their perception, a lack of respect, right? And, you know, why don't you respect me? And one way that men might get other men to respect them is by showing dominance, right? Mm-hmm. And so they apply it that way. Or she'll respect me if I cut her down and I'm up here, right? So by belittling, I'll get the respect that way.
But the interesting about, like, the yeah. interesting thing about that is it's not respect.
Mm-hmm.
It's fear.
It's fear,
and
yeah.
It's, you know, obedience due to fear, but it's still perceived as respect.
Mm-hmm.
So I think then you run into the issue of what does respect actually look like to that man, and does he have a wrong view of respect
mm-hmm.
and what it looks like, because
yeah.
that's fear.
Yeah. I mean, from what I know of, like, a lot of, like, Muslim marriages, we read The Valley of the Blue Burqas. Was that it? The book about Afghanistan.
In the Land of Blue Burqas.
In the Land of Blue Burqas. And the in that extremely high patriarchal society, there's not a love between the husband and the wife. It was kind of like a functional relationship. The love is between the son and the mother. And but just the harshness, the belittlement, and all that in an authoritative culture, especially like ancient Rome, you can just see how women are just not treated well. And so it's interesting how there's this complement of, you know, love also means you're not harsh, you're not embittered, you're not controlling her with your temper or your anger. We're not making
position.
Her afraid. You're not making her afraid of you.
Yeah. Right, or your position. Because, I mean, even in a church like ours where we believe, you know, a woman is to submit to her husband,
yeah.
a man can very easily use that to be harsh simply by becoming a quiet dictator in
mm-hmm.
his home.
Mm-hmm.
You're quitting your job tomorrow. Wait, what? You're quitting your job tomorrow. Let's go to Ephesians 5. A wife is to submit to her husband. You know, that is a harsh thing, right? Controlling
mm-hmm.
her and laying that things down like that, and that in that position, it is clear what she's called to do. She's called
mm-hmm.
to submit to him, and so he's using that against her, you know,
mm-hmm.
to control her instead of to love her and to
yeah.
you know, build her up and all those things.
Yeah. So strength of position.
So, right. Harsh can look a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
It's using his power over her
yeah.
to control her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are some ways, and we'll say Christian husbands. What are some ways Christian husbands can be harsh with their wives?
Thank you.
women, you can go ahead and say, I think a lot of times guys just, sometimes we'll give them the benefit of the doubt that they just don't know, like in the case of our youngest, right? I think the obvious one is raising your voice would be one, right?
Can you see that again? Sorry.
Raising your voice would be one way of being harsh with your wife.
Like this? Sorry.
Gotcha.
Sorry.
I respect that, by the way. I respect that. That was on me. I should have picked it up.
Actually, that had some background noise.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so raising your voice would be one thing. What are some other ways that, you know, a husband, Christian husband, can be harsh?
Just inattentive.
Okay.
You're trying to get their attention in a gentle way, but they're distracted with something else.
Okay.
And you don't want to impose yourself, but you're like, can you pay attention to me?
Okay. So it's kind of the, I will pay attention to you when you feel like you're in a vulnerable situation because you don't want to be the nagging, unsubmissive wife. Okay.
I think also like not listening to the wife in an area that she is definitely stronger in. No offense to all the dads out there, but like parenting, for example, mm-hmm. moms are just the natural parent, whereas the dads are like, I'm going to do it this way. Well, it's not going to work.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to do it this way. Well, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it doesn't work, and then I'm not speaking.
That never happens.
But I'm like, that could be a way of being harsh. Like, I'm going to do it my way, no matter what you say, even though you have more experience in this. And mm-hmm. just kind of like dismissing.
Yeah.
Like, kind of from my own spin, just the habit of not listening.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Of not being able to receive any input in certain
yeah.
things.
How about this? How are some way, subtle ways that the husbands might punish their wives?
Telling them no Starbucks for a week.
Yeah. Like, one would be, like, because you overspent, I'm giving you, you have to run every purchase by me. Even in our budget, yeah, every purchase. How about less than $5? Even less than $5, everything has to be run by me. Right? So that would be an example of one. Otherwise, that husbands might, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, the harshness is a way of getting your way, but sometimes it could be the fruit of resentment.
Embarrassing her in public or in front of people she respects, tearing her down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
An attitude of impatience or annoyance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think in a Christian home, a lot of it will be attitudes. I mean,
yeah.
If you're raising your voice and stuff, she's probably going to hopefully gently correct you.
Yeah.
But the way you can get back is just those general attitudes or withholding affection or not
yeah.
doing something you know she wants you to do.
Yeah.
Procrastinating on your to-do list or something.
Yeah. No, that's good. I think acting exasperated.
You mentioned the physical, imposing your physical presence on them.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we have a difference in physical presence.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be my height or my weight. It can be my look. It can be my
mm-hmm.
okay now. You know, it's just
yeah.
that I can communicate a lot to her with just a look or with a
mm-hmm.
with a reaction to what she just said or what just happened.
Yeah.
And it becomes a physical thing.
Yeah.
I'm imposing my will, I'm imposing my desires because of a physical reaction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So on the positive side, I mean, what's the opposite of being harsh? Gentle and so what are some actions and activities that communicate that?
I think asking your wife for her input and to talk about everything that you're thinking about, the decisions you're making, that you really want to hear her opinion, that you're making decisions together, and that Mm-hmm. You know, your leadership is not one that is exclusive, that excludes mm-hmm. her, but involves her, includes her.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's something to my strength at your service. Like Declan didn't even have a chance to use his strength to help his wife. Right? He didn't even have a chance to do that. But there is something to be said for, you know, my strength at your service. Oh, let me get that for you. Let me take that down. Do you know what I'm saying? Where I recognize that I'm stronger than you, but I want to be used at your service. That's why I like honey-do list and eagerness to do that and do those projects. And I think says a lot, right? Other things, ladies, want to give us some tips?
I think like just complimenting her and always seeking to find something nice to say. You know, if she's cooked dinner, maybe you didn't really like the way she cooked the broccoli, but the chicken tasted good, so you said, hey, I really love the chicken, and just don't say anything about the broccoli. Or,
but what if she says, what did you think of the broccoli?
That's a case-by-case basis, and you have to discuss that in your marriage and see if that's okay or not.
Yeah, well, the holiday sauce is great.
Yeah. there's a lot that you can, you know, it flows from the heart, and so if your heart's bitter all the time, it's going to be really hard to say something nice.
Yeah.
And so if your heart is happy and your heart is joyful, then you're going to be looking for nice things to say. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes a long way for a wife.
Yeah. So with the husbands, let's say you find yourself being harsh and bitter, right? And it's a heart issue, right? Out of the heart, the mouth speaks and the body acts. I mean, what are some, you can just say love your wife, right? Just love her. But what are some things that can kind of help turn the corner for a guy who is struggling with this issue?
Be in tune with her love language.
Okay.
What like really makes her happy? Like, you know, for some women it's acts of service, like take out the trash. Mm-hmm. Whereas for other women, you know, it's words of affirmation. Like they would rather you tell them, mm-hmm. hey, you did this really awesome. And they don't care if you take out the trash or not, because they can take out the trash just as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so just being in tune with that and feeding that.
Yeah.
I think in the same way that you can tear your wife down with your words, you can also really build her up and affirm her.
Uh-huh.
Kind of the same way with Christ in the church. There's many times where we know who we are and what our identity is because of what the word says and what Christ says about us and who we are. And so taking those opportunities to affirm and encourage mm-hmm. your wife into who she is as a child of God, daughter of God, and
mm-hmm.
a great wife, a wonderful mother, all the things that she does.
Mm-hmm.
Encouraging her as she's growing, you're seeing her being sanctified, all those things are ways that you can esteem her.
Yeah.
I think if you're really hoping to change, you want to look at the root sin. So why did you really love her? I don't think it's that you actually don't necessarily love your wife, or like, I'm thinking with my children, like, why did I respond impatiently? Mm-hmm. It wasn't that I don't love them, it's that they interrupted what I was doing, or
mm-hmm.
So it's usually a sin that I need to go after in my own heart.
Yeah. And that's a good way of looking at it, because, I mean, you're stronger than your kids. Right? So anytime you have a strength advantage over someone, there's a temptation to be harsh. Yeah.
It was kind of, if you're not getting your identity from Christ, you're not getting sometimes those affirmations for your own identity, and mm-hmm. sometimes that sin, you're not filling anything up to be able to flow out to your wife, you know, in the right ways.
Yeah. Somebody raise your hand over here. No. Okay. Yeah, so I think it's something to, I mean, strength is a stewardship, and the only reason why you're stronger is God made you stronger, or if you're a leader is because God made you a leader. Not because you're better or anything like that. Like, we just talked about how, why is money like the determiner of who should lead and not lead? And that's one of the drawbacks, like, of this worldly system of, like, the strong will lead, is it values that over other things. And it's really interesting how Jesus was a very gentle man. You know, he wasn't rich. He wasn't in a position of power. He did not have, like, this noble background. Can anything good come out of Nazareth, right? But yeah, it's kind of a different way of looking at it than the world. And so I think one of the takeaways is
you can't let the world impact your marriage either as a reaction against it or the embrace of it. The Bible needs to do it. And the major call, at least for men, is to love and not be harsh. And one of the turning points, I think, to really do this, and Paul really blows this out in Ephesians, he is really looking at the model of Christ in the church and having that kind of steeped in your inner workings and thought life as you interact. So we'll talk about that next week. So let me pray and then we'll move on. Well, Father, I do thank you for these brothers and sisters, and I pray for the men of this room that we will just recognize that strength is a stewardship, whether it's our position or even physical strength, and that we will use it to serve our wives and not be harsh with them. I pray that you'll help us to see different ways that we might be falling short in that area, and to really double down and really work on loving our wives. In Christ's name, amen.